You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Alex Dormat and his band, Hot Texas.
We are so delighted to have you with us again this week. We feel like guests in your home or wherever you're listening to us, and we thank you for inviting us in. Hey, Jim, Hot Texas.
Yeah, speaking of Alex, he's going to be on the show here in a couple of weeks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and this is the album that little bit of music is from. It's actually the title of that album is Hot Texas, and this is what we're going to be talking with Alex about. He's going to be with us April 11th. Yeah. We're going to have singer, songwriter, band leader, and Texas swing aficionado, and
good friend
Alex Dormat with us next month. Can you believe April is like
coming right around the corner?
Oh my goodness. Well, let's see. What do we got going on tonight, Jim?
Our special guest tonight is Jean Cooney.
There she is.
Jean, how are you?
Hi. I'm fine. It's so nice to be back with you.
It is. It's so great that you are.
It is. So last time you were with us in August, and then the show was so popular that we rebroadcast it, I don't remember, around Thanksgiving or some other time last fall. We talked about this title. What was this one, Jean?
It's Murder, Don't You Know.
Don't You Know. And now tonight we're going to be talking about, and this is the mock-up of?
It's Murder, You Betcha.
So Jim has a little bio intro. You want to go ahead and share that?
Yes. Jean Cooney. Jean is an author and a humorist, writes and speaks about life as a middle-aged woman in Northwest Minnesota. The author of 5 cozy mysteries, the latest, It's Murder, You Betcha, is scheduled for release April the 16th. All the books are set in the Red River Valley in northwest Minnesota, an area populated by Scandinavian Lutheran farmers and 100 kinds of hot dish. Don't you know?
Oh, don't you know? Well, Miss Jean, what has been going on since you were with us August of last year?
Oh, been writing, always writing. And a couple fun things have happened. The book we talked about last time, It's Murder, Don't You Know, was optioned for a stage play. And so that's in production. It'll be a play for community theaters to rent and then perform in their communities. And so that's really exciting. I really have not much to do with the play, although they do kind of keep me in the loop, which is really, really fun. There's professional playwrights and directors and things that are working on that. And it will be premiering, I believe, in February 2025.
Oh, wow. A year, less than a year from now.
Yeah.
The book is going to be released in April, mid-April.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, again, we were so delighted to be able to be advanced readers to prepare for tonight and to be able to read this new one. It's Murder, You Betcha. So, of course, what we received was a PDF, and so we were both reading, and we can both read electronically a PDF at the same time. That's no problem. But, you know, Jean, we read aloud to each other the first, 40 or 45 pages. And today I went back and I reread aloud one of the very humorous scenes. And we were just like tears and we were laughing so hard. And you can see why this lends itself so beautifully to a live, reading like old time radio. Everybody could be at a microphone or eventually a play, because there's also really fun action and hijinks that go on that will be very fun. But if you're a part of our audience out there, when you get this book, read it aloud.
Yeah, we actually hope to be developing audiobooks of that, to know, and of You Betcha. That's something that we're starting to look at, because so many people have said, this is so fun to be read aloud.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're trying to come up with a few people with good Scandinavian accents and see if we can't get a fun audiobook.
Did you have a question? Yeah.
I know, when we back up a little bit and kind of start with, when did you actually start writing?
I started writing, I never intended to write novels. I had a job with U.S. Department of Justice, and I was their communication director. And so every day I dealt with the worst of the worst crimes and dealing with reporters on those cases. And it was worthwhile work, but very depressing. Mm-hmm. So I went to it's called The Loft. It's a literary center in Minneapolis where I lived at the time, and took a writing course, took several of them. And I always steered towards humor writing. And then not long after that, I had the opportunity to actually take a humor writing study course through my regional arts council. And I am now a artist in residence focusing on how to write humor. And so I'm available to teach those to community eds or to, high school students or college or whatever. So that's where it all came from. But I wrote some stuff in my loft class, and the instructor thought it was funny. And she said, we should do something with this. And so she kind of encouraged me and coached me on how to go about sending things. That's how the first book was born. That was called Hot Dish Heaven, a murder mystery with recipes. And then there were two subsequent books in that series. And now, after those three books were so successful, I started the It's Murder series. And the next book coming out will be the second in that series.
Yeah, very, very fun. So did you get some fun news today?
Yes, I did. I was telling Jim and Bobby Jean before we went on the air that I got a Kirkus review. And for those who don't know, Kirkus reviews are the premier reviews for writers. Everybody wants a good Kirkus review. And I got one today. It was just very nice. And
that's great.
Yeah, they loved the story. They called it charming, engaging. In fact, they said it was infused with charm. They found my characters, especially Doris, my protagonist, to be refreshingly funny, they said. So I'm just real thrilled with that.
Do you have do you want to ask about Cozy Mysteries? And what's the difference?
Yeah, I do, but I have a question. Oh. How long does it take you write this stories, the books?
I'm slow. I write often with a group of other women. Candace Simar, you had her on last week. is one woman in that group. It's a group of predominantly Minnesota women writers, but not always. There are a few from all over the country. And we get together a couple times a year and write and critique each other and encourage each other. And then when we aren't together, we do that via phone or email or what have you. And I marvel at some of those women, because we'll sit down and write for a couple hours and they just have pages and pages. And I'm lucky if I get a paragraph. I'm real slow. I think about things a long time.
Sure. Well, I don't think it's meant to be a race. I guess unless you're really up against deadline. You know, if you're really up against deadline, that's probably a different story.
You know, Bobby mentioned Cozy Mysteries. You want to just talk to us and the audience a little bit about a cozy mystery? How does that work?
I'll end up getting up on my soapbox. Genre is cozy mysteries, and that I can't change that, because if you're going to publish your work, it has to fit into some niche. As I'm often told, we have to know where in the bookstore to put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So cozy mysteries are usually in the mystery section. However, they aren't thrillers, mm-hmm. and they aren't police procedurals. They're different in that the protagonist is usually a woman and usually is an amateur sleuth. And she gets involved with these crimes mostly because she's a little nosy. and because something pulls her in, whether it's an accused family member or the death of a neighbor or something like that. Something gets her involved. And with a cozy, you aren't going to see a lot of blood and guts on the page. Mm-hmm. You aren't going to see that. You aren't going to see a lot of sex on the page. It's just toned down. They're fun. They're easy reading. It's not a lot of swearing. It's just very nice. As Kirkus reviewer said in my review, it's a leisurely pace. Mm-hmm. And that's what these are. They are heavy on community and family and friends and the setting. So the crime almost, not quite, but almost becomes secondary mm-hmm. to all these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, characters are usually kind of colorful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think it's a very good definition. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, and in this these two books, the place the community, one of the places the community gathers is More Hot Dish Please Cafe. Mm-hmm. And yep. So, you know, the beauty of a cafe is there are people there all day long. You have some regulars that just are there the first several hours of the day. There's there's the women that hang out in the corner. And so Grace, who owns the cafe and is the chef, she kind of has a pulse. She's not always out in, you know, serving. But she kind of knows who's been in, and then there's lots of overheard conversations, which you weave into the story so brilliantly.
Gossip.
and then when we talk about the murders, now this book had two, no spoiler alerts, this book had two, but we don't see them.
No.
They happen off the page.
Right.
And that's so often, I think if you think of a Hallmark murder mystery movie or Murder, She Wrote, or, you know, we know something's coming, but then they go to a commercial and when they come back.
Well, Bobby, you're actually right on the money. Hallmark Mysteries, Murder, She Wrote. They're great examples of cozy mysteries.
Yeah, so we need you on the Hallmark Channel.
Well, you know.
There you go.
There we go.
Actually, a few years ago, one of the producers for Hallmark Mysteries contacted my publisher and took those first three books, the Hot Dish books. And my publisher reminded me not to get too excited, though, because they frequently will do that. And then they said, and then it might be years, and they'll look at it and think, aha, we can do something with this, or you may never hear from them again.
Yeah.
So far, I'm the latter. But we'll see.
We are going to take a break in a moment, but before we do that, what the heck is ice fishing, and why is it so popular where you live?
Well, ice fishing is important in this book. And Minnesota is known as a land of 10,000 lakes. And there's way more than 10,000. And we also have long, cold winters. And so it's very common by about December, the middle of December, the ice, the water on these lakes has frozen. And there might be 20 inches of ice on the lake. Maybe more, maybe less on some. But anyway, it's enough for people to drive with their pickups out on the ice. And it's enough for them to bring what they call their fish house or their ice house out there and set it up. Then they auger a hole through the ice, and they can sit in that little shack and fish all day. And some of those little shacks aren't really little shacks. They can get pretty extravagant. So, they might have stoves, refrigerators, TVs, beds. And so people can actually stay out there for days at a time.
That's so fun. We are going to take a quick break, and then we're going to hear about where you all that are listening or watching can get Jean's books, as well as all of those of our guests on Rendezvous with a Writer. And when we come back, you betcha she's going to read a little something for us right from the book. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops, the bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. With special guest, Jean Cooney. We were just talking about our latest book. You betcha.
It's murder.
It is murder. You betcha.
You betcha.
Jean, you were going to read a little bit from a little passage in the book.
Well, I was looking at all kinds of passages, and I think maybe the one that will set the scene for people, because it is about ice fishing. I'm just going to start at the beginning and read a few paragraphs.
Very
good.
So you
get an idea of where these books are set. So it starts, "Now don't slip," I warned 90-year-old Rose O'Brien as she shuffled across the ice from my SUV towards my son's fish house, one of two dozen scattered across the ice in the middle of Lake Brunson. The scene called to mind a winter village, not the kind in a snow globe or a heartwarming tale about the Alps, rather the desolate kind you see in National Geographic. The land surrounding Lake Brunson lay flat and lifeless, marked by scraggly evergreens and bare oaks, their limbs twisted as if embarrassed by their nakedness. Jiminy Christmas, Doris. Rose's words were accompanied by puffs of frigid air. It's not as if I had a hankering to fall until you warned me against it. Rose had insisted that we go ice fishing. We usually went a couple times every winter, yet it was nearly the end of February, and this was our first trip. After attending Mass that morning, Rose and I, along with my sister Grace, who preferred to sleep in on Sundays, ate a late breakfast in the house we shared, packed our refreshments, and took off for the lake. It was a 17-mile drive from where we lived in Halleck, a Scandinavian, meaning conservative, farming community of fewer than 1,000 people in the Red River Valley of northwestern Minnesota, 20 miles south of the Canadian border. And that's where the book and the story is set.
And pretty quickly, they're fishing.
Yep.
And Rose catches something.
Right. you want me to read that little passage?
Would you read that little passage? Because okay. It's not really a spoiler. I mean, because it starts right
it's
away.
It's not a spoiler. I won't spoil it. Okay. Rose hollered, "Heavens to Murgatroyd." I wheeled around as she added, "I've got something." She yanked on her pole. "Quick, Doris, get the whatchamacallit." "You mean the net?" "Yeah, whatever." She took to her feet while I collected the net from where it was racked on the wall. "He's a heavy son of a gun." She wrenched her line. "But not much fight in him. Maybe there's nothing there." Grace set her own rod aside and edge closer. "Maybe you're just tangled up." "No, my line's coming in." Rose cranked her reel and it squawked with tension. "It's just slow. He's probably a fat old geezer." Grace and I lowered our heads over Rose's fishing hole, appearing as if praying to the patron saint of fishing. St. Evinrude, if I'm not mistaken. The taut line flitted about until something flashed below the surface of the water. I readied the net and Grace warned Rose, "Now don't reel him in too fast." The underwater image grew sharper. Nevertheless, I couldn't make it out. "Take your time," Grace added. "Don't be impatient." Rose set her jaw, but managed to growl, "I know how to land a fish, Grace. I've been doing it for 80-odd years." As if to put an exclamation mark on her point, she tugged her pole, causing a shoe to pop out of the hole in the ice. A multicolored men's sneaker, red, orange, black, and blue, the brand name imprinted on the side. "Well, I'll be. I guess you showed me." Grace extended an easy elbow to Rose's ribs. "But in the future, if you plan to fish your footwear, go for something a little less hideous, preferably in a woman's casual, size 6. Without taking my eyes off Rose's catch, I said to Grace, "It's not just a shoe. Look, a foot and a leg are attached." "What?" Rose's eyes widened in stunned disbelief, and she stumbled and sat down. "I recognize that shoe." Her words were barely audible as she sunk onto the bench seat. "Lars bought a pair when we went to Grand Forks. Said he had it. He just had to have them." "Are you sure?" Grace commandeered Rose's pole. "No disrespect, Rose, but Lars is kind of old. And that shoe strikes me as something only a teenager would wear." "Well, he wanted to become a snappier dresser." I checked Rose's chin with my knuckle. "Don't jump to any conclusions. Lars can't be the only man with those shoes." Grace inclined her head and whispered to me, "I wouldn't bet on that, Doris. How many people would hand over good money for a pair of those? They're butt ugly."
Gene Cooney, oh my goodness, it's Murder, You Betcha.
You know, do women equally ice fish as men do?
I don't think it's equal. Yeah. I think more men ice fish, right. But lots of women do. And lots of people have it as a family function. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll take even young kids. Because ice fishing poles are short. They're way shorter than regular poles. And you can have a whole bunch of holes in your ice house. And
yeah.
Everybody can fish. And then when they're tired, they can watch TV or whatever mm-hmm. else they're doing.
Different
nobody world. And nobody worries about the ice cracking and falling in or anything like that.
Well, there are some people who are told, as indicated in this book, that there is some moving water someplace or some thin ice mm-hmm. and they need to be careful and stay away from those places. And most people listen, some don't. And you always have a few people who think they know better. And so every year there is, I don't know necessarily people, because the rule of thumb is when you go out there on the ice, you keep your door open, you know, and then you drive out there. And that way, if something happens, you can get out. Ah. But it's not uncommon to hear that a pickup fell through. And then I think the owner has to pay for that to be retrieved.
Oh, wow.
And I doubt that they work very well after that. I don't know.
That's one of those mayhem Allstate or whatever.
Mayhem. Yeah.
Gene, let's talk about your characters for a couple of minutes. We met the first three, of course, in this scene. Doris and Grace and Rose. These ladies, they entertain us through all of the stories. And I love that they're back. You know, they become, I think, as a reader, we really enjoy them. And can you just tell us, just set up a little bit about the relationship between them and kind of what part does each one play in the telling of the story?
Okay. Well, the protagonist, these are in first person. And so Doris, the older sister, is the speaker. And so everything is through her point of view. Grace is a couple years younger than her. So Doris is about 61, 62 in there, and Grace is like 59 or so. They're both just shy of Social Security. Doris, they both grew up on farms in the area. Doris stayed and married quite young and went on to be a farmer with her husband. Grace went off to college and culinary school, and after working in Chicago and Minneapolis, she came back and opened her own little cafe in the town. Then there's Rose. And Rose was a relative, kind of, and a dear friend of Grace and Doris's mother. So she became kind of a second mom to them. And she ended up staying at the house temporarily. And it's turned into much more than just a short stay.
Yeah.
And it probably, she'll just remain there.
Yeah. And all three live together. They all have a good space within the house, but they all live with Doris. They both live with Doris in Doris's house.
Yes. I think Rose is a very interesting character. Right. This lady Doris is 90 years old.
And they, Doris and her family lived out on the farm. And then her two kids were grown, and her husband died while he was harvesting soybeans. And so she turned the farm operation over to her son, the older of the two. And then she had her Sears and Roebuck house, because a lot of the houses up in that area were ordered from Sears and Roebuck shortly after the railroad had made its way up that far. And so people would get the kit of these farmhouses on the train, and then they'd put them together. Well, so when Rose decided she wanted to move into town, her kids were afraid she was going to get too isolated out on the farm. She had the house picked up, put on a specially designed trailer, and moved into town. And so that's where she was. And then Grace, her sister, ended up there. And then Rose ended up there.
Now, Grace is a lot of fun and talented gal. She likes to wear some provocative kind of t-shirts. In the book last book that we read, you gave us as the author, we got to see her throughout the book in various t-shirts with these humorous slogans on them. Yeah. This book that we see a little bit less, but one of the two is fishing's tough, but I can tackle it.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that? When you think about Grace between her hair and kind of what she wears, and where did she come from in your imagination?
Well, I wanted Grace. You always need, when you're writing a story, you need somebody like the sidekick. You need somebody so you can have dialogue. So you need somebody with your hero or your heroine. And so I needed another person besides Doris. And Doris is, I think, funny and stuff, but she also is the solver of the crime. So I couldn't have her be too off the wall. So I thought, well, that's who the protagonist, or that's who the sidekick will be,
right?
The opposite of Doris. Doris is a little more serious. Grace is a little more cavalier, you know.
Do you, I know you have
Well, I have two things. Actually, I did research for a quote, you know, regarding ice fishing. And I have to echo what you're talking about on shirts. I never saw so many shirts with ice fishing sayings on them. You know,
when you went online.
I didn't know they had all these shirts that had to say this about ice and fishing.
Ice fishing is big up here. It's big in the Midwest, especially here in Minnesota.
You have a sheriff in here by the name of Carl.
Yes, Carl.
Now, Carl Britson.
He's a little bit of a romantic interest here for Doris.
Yep. You need that in a cozy. Little bit of romantic interest. Yeah. Nothing too risque, but there needs to be something. And so that's who Carl is.
And he's a sharp guy. I mean, he's a sharp guy too. There's a character that in the last book we saw a little bit more of, but in this book he's still there. And your description of him is so wonderful. This would be Rose's doctor, Dr. Andrew Betcher.
Yep.
And Rose does refer to him as the cat's meow at least once, although Doris is not a fan of Dr. Betcher. Will you be offended if I read what Doris has to say about him?
I would love it.
Because I think as much as the book has these wonderful humorous scenes, there's just this wonderful sense of humor as you read along that just even comes up just from descriptions. So here is Dr. Andrew Betcher. He twitched his nose, his horn-rimmed glasses bobbing up and down. With his white hair and pink complexion, I likened him to an overgrown lab rat with a stethoscope You can just see it. I mean, you can.
Yeah, I can. Poor guy.
Oh. But he thinks he's wonderful.
Well, yeah.
So I don't think we need to feel too sorry for
right,
him.
Right.
You know, I like this one, Tweety, you know? Tweety is a little bombshell that works at the cafe.
Yeah.
You know, and what did you say? If Tweety's brains were ink, there wouldn't be enough there to dot an I.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a flirt, but she's not real bright.
Yeah.
And there's a line in there that I laughed when I wrote it, because she comes in and she was at the jailhouse held, and then they released her, and she comes into the cafe and she is just incensed that they have the police had the nerve to arrest her. And she said, what they did to me was a flagrant abuse of my rights. And Grace says, I think you mean flagrant. And she goes, well, that's what I said. You know, she just did
see it. Yeah.
That would be Tweety.
Yeah, yeah. And then we have a character, Dot, who's new to this story.
Yeah.
And she's Lars's daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't have a note here. I'm guessing this is probably Doris that says this about her. She was greedier than a graveyard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as a reader, you just stop for a minute and go like, what exactly does that mean?
That
and we said
from?
That to each other, like, what does that mean? And then, you know, you get it. I mean, yeah. That's what I think is fun, because it's smart humor, and it does make us think and then laugh and then, you know, move along to the next sentence. Let's see, who are some of the others that return from this book?
Well, Gustav,
yes,
the banker, he's in here again.
Yes.
And he was in the last one. And Ed Munson, the deputy, was in the last one, and he returns. There might be a few more, but
there's probably the main ones.
They're the main ones, I think.
Yeah. There's a character, Etta, and she she's Doris is with her when Etta goes to answer her door at Etta's home. Yeah. You just mentioned Gustav. And we don't know, because we're in the first person with Doris, and Doris doesn't know who's going to be at the door.
Right.
Etta opens the door and Gustav is there. And this is Etta opened the door. Her greeting chock full of the kind of excitement usually reserved for schoolgirls on first dates, or me when I discover an Amazon package on my porch.
We don't have a lot of excitement, you know, up in Dallas. Yeah. So Amazon deliveries are a big deal.
We, you know, we're just so, it's just so fun chatting with you. And Jim, you had a thought earlier today that we just wanted to bring up during this short time we have together.
Well, we were thinking about, you know, if some of our readers out there, you know, that are, might be authors, might want to be a guest on the show. So how would they do that, Bobby?
Yeah, we could ask Gene. Well, it's very simple. If you think you would, you know, you'd like to join us, just send me an email. It's a kind of a long name, but it's Bobby with an I, BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com. You could go to our Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page and you could say, hi, how can I join you? Or something like that. And I'll get back to you. And then we were thinking,
maybe somebody might want to advertise some or talk about some, maybe a commercial spot for a few seconds, and they could do that too.
So if you're an author, a publicist, a publisher, a literary agent, or you just have a great product or service and you think this would be a fun platform to use, again, we'd be more than happy to chat with you. BobbyJeanBell@gmail.com. And we're pretty easy, Jean, to work with, aren't we?
I was just going to encourage people to make a request because these interviews are really fun. Jim and Bobby Jean are great.
Thank you. You know, speaking of humor, you had this question here. Are there some challenges to writing humor?
It is hard because I think everything I write is hilarious. And I have to have lots of beta readers. Okay. And then they're going to say, no, that's not that funny, you know. Mm-hmm. Or else they'll say, I don't get it. Because the reference is so specific to the location or to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I read earlier about Grace and Doris leaning over the fishing hole, mm-hmm. looking at what Rose caught. And I said, it appeared as if we were praying to the patron saint of fishing, Saint Evinrude, I believe. Well, I don't know. Probably a lot of people don't know. I was referencing Evinrude Motors, which is one of the most popular fish boat motors, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But some people wouldn't know that. So if I had too many beta readers saying, I don't get it, then I'd pull that out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then too, I try to be very careful to make the humor, for the most part, self-deprecating humor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make fun of things that will offend people.
Yes. Yeah. You have.
But there's a few characters I'm going to make fun of.
Well, with lines like, as useless as a screen door in a canoe.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I didn't write down who was being described, but I thought, you know, there's some days I think I'm as useless as a screen door in a canoe.
Exactly.
I think you got to scratch your head on that one. Screen door in a canoe?
Well, another thing, of course, you're writing a mystery. And unlike reading, let's say, a Sherlock Holmes, where we just know that he has amazing powers of observation, but we're not in his head. He doesn't tell us what he's seeing. So we just not going to argue with him, you know, that's a such and such a hair on that jacket.
Right.
But because we're in Doris's head, first, you know, she's great at putting together things that even though she's telling that we're following along with her, she'll have a scene with somebody and she'll say, but wait a minute, you were at the cafe and you said such and such. Well, we were there often with her and we didn't put two and two together. What's that like to write? How do you write those layers?
Well, I'm glad that you overlook some of that, because that's what makes a mystery fun. And because then when it's done and you think, oh, I didn't know he or she would be the killer. And then you could look back and say, oh, here was
a clue.
And there was a clue. And there was a clue. And it's hard. I think I'm getting better. You know, this was my fifth book. I think I'm getting better at it. But oftentimes with a mystery, maybe some people are so good they can just write it all through. Mm. I find I have to write it, and then I go back and think, okay, here's a point where I could stick a clue in, and here's a point where I could do a red herring, a clue that steers people in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go through all that, and at the end I have to make sure they all make sense.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and there was a scene where I think she might have been in the cafe with the sheriff or somewhere. They're together. And she says something to him about somebody has made a comment or she'd heard. And he immediately pushed his chair back and he got up and he goes, I got to go. And that was a piece of information he didn't have yet. And I don't remember what the piece of information was, but I thought, you know, she's really in so many ways, she's out hearing things. He's doing his detective stuff, but she's really, you know, she's out there. And I just thought it's really fun how you've put that all together.
In that instance, he found out through that conversation with her that Gustav had lied to him.
That's it. I'm looking at the clock. I can't believe it. So
we're zipping by.
We are. So, Jean, what are you reading now?
I am always reading mysteries. I just love them. And I try to read them sometimes just for pleasure. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I read them more critically so I can learn from them. I try to read really good mystery writers. In the cozy genre, one I'm reading a lot right now is a guy named Richard Osman, O-S-M-A-N. Anytime he has a new book out, I'm reading it right then, because he writes cozy mysteries set in England. Mm-hmm. And his little cohort of investigators are also senior citizens, but they live in a retirement home and they don't want to do bingo.
You can only do so much bingo. Yeah.
So somehow they get cold cases and then they try to solve them.
That's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's fun. And yeah, go ahead.
So we get the
Jean, yeah. Where can people find you and where can they order the book, which it will be coming out soon?
Yep. You can, my website is jeancooney.com and there's all kinds of information there. Or you can look for my Facebook page, Jean Cooney Author. Don't go to my personal one. All you'll see is granddaughter pictures. And then the book is scheduled for release April 16th. And it'll be available nationwide in bookstores. You'll be able to order it on Amazon. In fact, you can pre-order it right now. There are other book places that you can order it. In fact, I think you guys have one.
It's on our bookshop page, pre-order. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, don't you know? Don't you know? It's on our.
Don't you know?
Betcha.
You betcha. We got it. Jim has a couple of quotes. I think we have time quickly.
Slip them in here. Now, this is from Doris. Okay. Following the service, everybody tagged along with Laura's immediate family to the fellowship hall in the church basement. The smell of scorched coffee collided with the scent of pine sole and musty hymnals to create an odor unique to church basements everywhere. Against a backdrop of tan walls, white acoustical ceiling tile, and speckled industrial flooring, a buffet awaited. Tuna noodle hash
hot dish,
green jello salad with shredded carrots, and a variety of bars graced a long table covered in red tissue paper, undoubtedly left over from Valentine's Day.
Yep.
Right from this book. And you had one more.
And one more about the initial subject of the book. It is better to sit in the fish house and think about God than to sit in church and think about fishing.
Well, Jean, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Don't go away. We're delighted to have you with us. And you know, this is episode 78, and it is already up live on Facebook, and it'll be going to all the streaming platforms before I go to bed tonight. So if you're looking for it on your favorite podcast channel, look for episode 78, Jean Cooney. And we want to thank you all for watching, if you're listening or watching tonight. And we want to thank Sam Hassan, LA Talk Radio. And next week, Jim, what can you do in 4 minutes?
In 4 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of things you can do in 4 minutes.
Oh, well, join us next week. We are so excited when our special guest is Brian Andrews, part of the international best-selling team of Andrews and Wilson. We have already delved into this book. It's amazing. We'll be talking about their new book launching April 2nd. Again, we'll be talking about a book before it's available. 4 minutes. Say, keep watching, keep reading, keep writing. And
it's always a great day out west.
See you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
Bye. Thank you.